Let's turn to the book of 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 3. I'd like to just make some observations tonight. Some simple points, I think, from 1 Samuel about Eli and his sons. This was part of our reading. Actually, it was last week, or a week before, it was part of our reading. And just thought it'd be good for us to back up on this just a little bit. And we're looking at Eli and some of the problems with his sons. And what we can easily see and realize is that he did not, as some text would say, he did not restrain them, or he restrained them not. And that is, he didn't exercise the authority and opportunity to teach them and lead them that he should have had. Raising children is never easy. You know, from the first family in recorded history until now, we can see that it's tough being a parent. Grandparenting can provide its challenges too, I'm learning. And if we want to have influence, this is, if we want to have influence for good and to try to lead our children and grandchildren in a godly way. I mean, we can want and we can expect that our children will always walk in the way of the Lord, but we can't assume that. They may not walk in the way we want them to regarding a lot of things. The real challenge for us as parents is to know how and to know when to provide instruction and what kind of instruction that will be corrective and that will be helpful. And that sometimes, even if we don't get the timing right on the correction to be given, we better make sure that we are actively teaching. And so there's some lessons that come from long ago from the book of 1 Samuel. And the high priest, who is Eli, he was high priest and he was judge of Israel. 1 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 11 beginning. And the Lord said to Samuel, "See, I am about to do something in Israel that will make the ears of everyone who hears it tingle. At that time, I will carry out against Eli everything I spoke against his family from the beginning to the end. For I told him that I would judge his family forever because of the sin that he knew about. His sons made themselves contemptible, and he failed to restrain them." So we've stepped into the middle of the story here. But in just a few verses, we get a pretty clear indication of what this text is about. I mean, here is Eli, who was a man of God and who listened to the words of God. And he served God for many years, and he didn't die until he was old. And yet, all was not well with Eli. And when he died, his family was a mess. And he was to be blamed. At least he had to share in that blame. And so severe were the transgressions of his sons that God pronounced a punishment on Eli's house. Not just on his sons, but on generations to come. There were consequences because of the sins of his sons and Eli not restraining them. So the text provides an analysis here of the house of Eli and his leadership. And the commentary is sad. That is, it's a sad story. But you know, there's a little bit more to the story, in that Eli knew about the evil that his sons were committing. I mean, this is another part of the problem. Turn back a page to chapter 2, and in verse 22. Now Eli, who was very old, heard about everything his sons were doing to all Israel and how they slept with the women who served at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And so he said to them, "Why do you do such things? I hear from all the people about these wicked deeds of yours. No, my sons, it is not a good report that I hear spreading among the Lord's people. If a man sins against another man, God may mediate for him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him?" His sons, however, did not listen to their father's rebuke, for it was the Lord's will to put them to death. Well, the sins of Eli's sons were well known. Eli knew about him, and yet he failed to act. Well, we just read a text where he rebuked them, but his powers were actually greater than, it would have allowed him to do something greater than that. He failed to correct and punish them. And it was not a lack of understanding of God's expectations. He was high priest. He knew what God expected. And it was not the fact that he did not have the power to do anything more. In fact, he did. He was in a position to know God's law and to restrain his sons. But they did not give any respect to his authority. And that's the other thing. He had authority to do something more. He was their father, for one thing. But more than that, he was high priest and he was judge of Israel. And when he saw and he knew about the sins of his sons and he rebuked them and they didn't change, he didn't do anything more. And he certainly could have done more. As parents today, you know, we can learn from this sad account. In our lives, we can learn how serious God is about obedience. And we can learn something about the need of our not just rebuking our children, but punishing them. Well, that's a little harder to do when they're grown. When we have our children at home, as some do, we are in a position of authority to be able to do just that. We said before, Christians should not assume that their children will serve God. That's what we want. And we want that to happen, but we can't just assume that they will do that. Just because we are trying to live faithful lives before God does not mean that our children will automatically love and serve God. And we may be tempted to think that our children will be faithful to God just because they have grown up around godly parents. But you know, we can see time and again where that's not the case. And we should not assume it would be different with us. That just because we are trying to live a godly life, that our children somehow are going to just be that way. Incidentally, you think about Eli's case was not one that was just isolated. You know, somebody else that's interspersed in the story here is Samuel. And in time, if you just look ahead a couple of pages here to chapter 8, we see a little tidbit here about Samuel, not to get too far off our text. But this is just interesting to think about, that Eli was not an isolated case with regard to trouble with his children. Samuel, chapter 8, verse 1, when Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons as judges for Israel. The name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second was Abijah, and they served at Beersheba. But his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain and accepted bribes and perverted justice. Well, how far out of sorts were Samuel's sons? So much so that the people would later say to Samuel, set us up a king. They did not trust the judgments that would come from Samuel's sons. And it was one of the reasons, at least, why they turned and they said to Samuel, you know, give us a king. Another story for another time, but just thought that kind of fit in with our story here. Going back to Eli. It is interesting, and what is sad about Eli's home is that there's no mention of training or instruction. Now, of course, we don't know everything about Eli's home, but in this dialogue here, we just don't see anything about that. Training and instruction is an action that we must take. God commanded such. Remember in Deuteronomy chapter 6, we've read a number of times. We studied it not too long ago. The instruction that God gave through Moses to the children of Israel about teaching your children, not just your children, your children's children. Remember that? Teaching them the ways and the commands, the statutes of God. How to go about doing that. When you rise up in the morning, at the noonday, in the evening, when you're walking along the way. And we got the impression of just how important God viewed the teaching of our children and our grandchildren. Later, the Apostle Paul would write about the need of bringing up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, fathers in particular, bear the brunt of that responsibility. Training does not happen automatically. Instead, it's something that we have to work at diligently, we have to take seriously, much like the diligent effort that is required for us to gain some new skill or ability. Learning the ways of God demands desire and effort for us to learn or for us to teach. You know, it's interesting to me sometimes how much time is spent with children in recreational things. Not that that is wrong. It can be some real value add. But I saw a little cartoon, I guess you would say, just this last week that was striking. Had a little boy. Well, it wasn't a cartoon. It was actually a picture of a little boy, like Little League, up to bat. You know, he's only about that tall. Had a bat that looked bigger than him. And the caption said, "There is like a 0.0027.9% chance that your child is going to make it to the major league. There is a 100% chance that your child will stand before the Lord in judgment." And a lot of parents have spent a tremendous amount of time and effort and sometimes money to try to help their children to learn skills, athletic skills, so they can excel in those things, but have spent very little time and effort teaching them what God says about life and serving Him. We get the picture, don't we? I don't know what Eli was doing in his home when his children were small. We're not given anything about that. But I know that when his children were grown, he rebuked them because their sins were well known by everyone. But it does not appear that he went any farther than that, though he had the right and he had the authority to stop them, to take them out of place and position to be able to do the things that they were doing, and he didn't. In Deuteronomy chapter 13, little side trip again. Deuteronomy chapter 13. We're going to take up reading here at verse 6. Just to be reminded of some things that the Lord said through Moses about punishment for those who did not turn away from sin. Deuteronomy 13, verse 6. If your very own brother or your son or daughter or the wife you love or your closest friend secretly entices you, saying, "Let us go and worship other gods, gods that neither you nor your fathers have known, gods of the peoples around you, whether near or far, from one end of the land to the other," do not yield to him or listen to him. Show him no pity. Do not spare him or shield him. You must certainly put him to death. Your hand must be the first in putting him to death, and then the hands of all the people. Stone him to death because he tried to turn you away from the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Then all Israel will hear and be afraid, and no one among you will do such an evil thing again. Well, that's powerful and absolutely emphasizes to us God's view of how to deal with sin, even if it's our son or daughter, our wife or best friend. What our response needs to be to this. Now we think back to Eli, and do we have a better picture of what Eli didn't do when the sins of his sons became so evident to him and to others? I don't know if this is what Eli's sons were trying to do directly, if they were trying to lead people away in this, but what they were doing is greatly perverting God's law. I know this much for sure back in our text, 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 17. For the sin of the young men was very great in the Lord's sight, for they were treating the Lord's offering with contempt. Something in the sin of these men was so great that it caused other men to abhor the offering to God. They were having an effect on even how others would worship God. And then furthermore, we can see that there was gross sexual immorality, verse 22. Now Eli, who was very old, heard about everything his sons were doing to all Israel, how they slept with the women who served at the entrance of the tent of meeting. You know, and with such grievous crimes that were being committed in the very shadow of the tabernacle, you would think that these men would have been stoned to death, not just by Eli, but by others who saw these things. But they were having influence, and it was not for good. You know, and just they were just very corrupt. Verse 17. The sin of the young men was very great in the Lord's sight, for they were treating the Lord's offering with contempt. Verse 12, Eli's sons were wicked men. They had no regard for the Lord. I mean, if there's any doubt, that verse right there just says how broad this is. They had no regard for the Lord. And Eli did not use the genuine authority that he possessed to turn aside this great evil. Family relationships versus duty to God. Well, that can be a struggle. But we need to see the danger of putting family relationships in front of duty to God. Sometimes with our children. I think sometimes for some of us, even more so with grandchildren, it becomes even harder to make corrections. And when we see them doing things that is just out of sort with what God would expect and want them to do, there's responsibility to make correction, to have something to say, to not just rebuke even, but to punish. And God reveals Eli's problem in chapter 2, verse 29. Why do you scorn my sacrifice and offering that I prescribed for my dwelling? Why do you honor your sons more than me by fattening yourselves on the choice parts of every offering made by my people Israel? The main point I want to make from that text is you honor your sons more than me. That's how God viewed it. Oh, he makes a point about what they were doing that was wrong. But here's what just stands out. Here is the issue. You honor your sons more than me. Discipline is not easy. It can be hard to condemn the actions of our children. But I'll tell you what will be harder is to see them walking in sin through their life. And when we have let opportunities of correction come and go by, and now they won't listen to us. Eli tried to rebuke them. They're not listening to him now. They're very set in their ways. That is painful. That is difficult to deal with. Real love will cause us to correct them. Will cause us to correct our children, especially our children who choose to not walk with God. We cannot ignore the sins of our children. To overlook their sins is to ignore the teaching of God. And if we love our children, we want more than anything for them to serve God faithfully. And then we should also learn a lesson about the foolishness of ignoring God. Eli ignored God. Actually, repeated warnings. Eli was told of judgment that would come against him because of these matters. We've read some from chapter 2, you know, verse 27 through the end of the chapter. Read a little bit with me here. Verse 27. Now a man of God came to Eli and said to him, "This is what the Lord says. Did I not clearly reveal myself to your father's house when they were in Egypt under Pharaoh? I chose your father out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to go up to my altar, to burn incense, to wear the ephod in my presence. I also gave your father's house all the offerings made with fire by the Israelites. Why do you scorn my sacrifice and offering that I have prescribed for my dwelling? Why do you honor your sons more than me by fattening yourselves on the choice parts of every offering being made by my people Israel?" He says a little bit farther in the latter part of verse 30, those who honor me, I will honor. Those who despise me, I will disdain. You know, this is a warning that is coming from God. There's multiple warnings given to Eli, you know, in this text. And even foretells what is going to come. What is going to be the consequence of these sins. Verse 34. And what happens to your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, will be assigned to you. They will both die on the same day. I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who will do according to what is in my heart and mind. I will firmly establish his house, and he will minister before my one always. And then verse 36, then everyone left in your family line will come and bow down before him for a piece of silver and a crust of bread and plead, anoint me to some priestly office so I can have food to eat. He's foretelling some things that are going to happen. Some things that do happen as the story unfolds. Eli still did not punish his sons. And he did not remove them as priests. Weakness on his part, a poor choice on his part. Perhaps God would have relented if Eli had fulfilled his responsibility as both a father and as a priest. But you know, it's not just about Eli. We try to look at the bigger picture here. We need to be honest and look at ourselves to see if we have been ignoring God's repeated warnings about sin in our life. The wages of sin is death. Romans 6:23 would say, there's a price to pay if we ignore what God's will is in our lives. There are consequences for sin. And we should learn lessons about leading our families when we consider Eli and his sons. How Eli failed in teaching love and respect to God, to his sons. But it turns around and we have to ask ourselves, what are we teaching our children? How are we teaching our grandchildren? When we rise up, when we lie down, when we walk along the way, what are we teaching our children and our children's children? We have opportunities to be an example to them and to be teachers to them. And failure to teach, to guide, and to discipline in the way of God will have its effects. And none of it will be good. And it stands to be catastrophic. You know, there are some lessons learned, as we said, as we look at Eli, his sons, and their lives. You know, parenting is hard. Parents make mistakes. There are challenges. In the big picture, we can see with regard to parenting, with regard to our own lives. And there's some application here that we can make about our own lives. That God means what he says. And I think sometimes we find ourselves in a point almost of tempting God. We seem like we want to kind of walk on that edge. Just how serious is God about what he said on this? He's very serious. God's never fooling around. He's always serious about these things. And regarding our worship to him, when he's been specific about such things as he was to the children of Israel, and they were not worshiping him as he wanted them to, and the priests were not doing the things that they should be doing, God was serious with regard to his discipline against them. And the consequences of failure to obey him and serve him become so very clear. Always. And we can learn something from Eli. We can learn several things from Eli. Just some things for us to think about. Here we are beginning a new week again. Facing new challenges and difficulties that the week may bring, what kind of choices, what kind of decisions are we going to make? Not just with our families, not just with our children, but in our lives alone, what are we going to do? What kind of examples are we going to set for our families, for those that we work around? How dedicated are we going to be to honoring what God says? We know and we understand the consequences of failure to do so. How dedicated are we going to be to living and serving him? Maybe Eli will help us to think about those things. The song we're singing tonight is a reminder to us that this life will soon pass. This life will soon fade away. I was trying to explain. I used an analogy in Africa that didn't work too well. I mentioned something about I'm getting more and more gray hair. They understand that point. And I said, my hourglass is running short on the top. They didn't know what an hourglass was. And so I had to try to explain what an hourglass was in the sand passing through the hourglass. And trying to explain, I don't know how much sand is left on the top side of this hourglass. I'm hoping there's still a few grains that has to run through yet. But I don't know. This life is like a flower. You know, it comes and it blooms for a while and then it fades away. And as time goes on, there's a part of me that hates to see this life come to an end. There's another part of me that says, it's okay. If we are right in the Lord, when this life comes to an end, it's okay. How will we stand before the Lord? And as we think about our life as a flower, we're just reminded that that day will come when we're before the Lord. Are you ready for the day? Do you need to respond to the gospel in any way? Can we help you? Would you come as we stand and sing?